Ain't shady, baby, I'm hot like the prodigal son. Pick up at the leeny, meeny, money, moe, and flower, you're the chosen one.
Hello, you've reached Hey Kids Comics, and what'd you think? Crossover number two. If your movie is Captain America, Civil War, press one.
I pressed one.
You chose Captain America, Civil War. Begin your
movie times
podcast.
Agent.
Agent.
Oh, hi guys.
I'm Cole Jedi Cole Houston. Somewhere out there is Andrew Farmer, the host of our wonderful show here tonight.
Operator!
And, of course, our agent, Catherine Houston, representing
Yay.
For What'd You Think?
What'd You Think?
Unfortunately, Bobby Blakey could not be with us tonight because he is training future martial artists in their craft.
Oh.
He is teaching others how to have the skill to destroy and the discipline not to.
That's right, top men. I was thinking last night about, we were talking about Chris Fulton offline, and we were talking about how he's the nicest guy in the world, but he looks like he can destroy you, like, at any point, like the scariest, nicest guy in the world. Bobby is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Bobby looks like the most unassuming guy in the world, but knows 800 ways to kill you from
any
position.
He is the one who could knock your block off without before you even knew it. He would so molar rom you.
And speaking of knocking your block off, I have a feeling that this is going to be a completely different podcast than our last crossover. Call it a hunch.
This one will knock your blockbuster off.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Netflix
soon for fans of the old rental stores.
I miss the rental place. I really do.
I briefly worked there.
The irony is that the little mom and pop, little indie shops that survived, and are still around today, are so like, we buried you.
That's right, we destroyed you. But yeah, so Catherine, what movie are we talking about tonight?
And chill.
Captain America: Civil War.
Because no one ever said Blockbuster and chill, by the way.
And something has really warmed my heart as a result of Captain America: Civil War is that Ken Burns' phone apparently has been ringing off the hook. Because I think I've seen more Ken Burns FaceTime in the last month.
Oh, yeah. It's like people are like writing to his website saying, you finally nailed it. This is much better than that other one. And shorter, too. 2.5 hours. Dial it back, Ken. Dial it back.
And he's like, thank you, but if it's not in monochrome, it's not me.
That's right. Not enough banjo. They had to escort him off the set. They're like, there's not enough banjo. Or wool. What's all this spandex? I ordered wool.
That's right.
Wool pants.
And beards. I want some beards.
Where are all the beards and the wool?
I want waist-length beards.
I need, like...
That's the name of my next band, by the way. Waist-length beards. That's a vocal exercise. Like, waist-length beards. Waist-length beards. Lion face.
In addition to more Ken Burns FaceTime on TV, when bringing up to this movie before it came out, what did you see in the previews that excited you, and what were you hoping to see?
Cole, you can go first.
Well, I was really excited about the Battle of Antietam.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of that. Shiloh was a huge surprise.
Battlegrounds of Gettysburg.
That's right. Man, some of the boys went down to the pictures and caught the new Captain America movie. I hope everyone back home got a chance to watch it as well, because it really is first rate.
Hurts my heart.
I'm sorry. If you don't have Sam Waterston, Garrison Keillor, and Peter Coyote voicing over, it's not Civil War to me. But in this case, I'll make the exception.
Garrison Keillor begins with you.
That's
the human centipede of
the old timey.
And that history professor that liked to sit.
Oh yes. Well, Captain America found himself in an untenable position vis-a-vis.
God.
The Accords of Sarkovia.
This is literally longer than it took to remove a leg.
Exactly. There would be like six or seven legs on the pile by now, the time that it took.
Right.
It took our friends from the past so much. It was so much quicker back then. But but perhaps they would have enjoyed the movies as well. Moving pictures, they call it. But this one, going in, I did, you know, like everybody, you saw a few of the previews. Instantly knew that if I hadn't seen like every single shot of Black Panther in the previews, that Black Panther was going to be the breakaway kick-ass character.
Right.
So
right.
I was praying, do not waste it all on the previews. Other than that, you know, there was a lot of argument, I think, in the fan community as to whether or not this should have been an Avengers picture, or, you know, was Cap getting kind of pushed off. It's like Captain America, you know, in parentheses.
Right, right.
You know, Civil War.
With featuring Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America Civil War featuring Captain America in very tiny print. But the reality was, I think if you're going to cover the Civil War concept, the storyline, what have you, taking it from Cap's point of view works better, really, than couching this as an Avengers picture, in which case it's like Avengers divided.
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't want to go see an Avengers movie about the Avengers hating each other. And it also,
isn't that what all the Avengers movies are about anyway?
That's so true. But this, you know, gave you the opportunity to, like, see you got a glue-free Zemo.
Which upsets me.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of upset me. We'll get into that later, but.
And I want to point out, Catherine and I went and saw at the Alamo Draft House, and they were showing a classic, that rudimentary animation,
mm-hmm.
Captain America, when he throws his mighty shield, and those who chose to pose a shield had to yield. Basically they were just adaptations of actual comics, and this particular one was a story of Captain America fighting Baron Zemo. And there was a great scene in it where this pilot is asking Zemo, how'd you get that crazy mask stuck to your face forever? And he starts to tell the story, and at the end, with this wonderful Jack Kirby art, it just looks like the guy said, yeah, I really didn't want to know that much.
Too far.
I didn't want to chat his voice. I was passing curiosity, Weird Harold.
It was only out of social grace that
social contract that I needed to fulfill.
Think about it, though.
What he taught me is don't be polite to Baron Zemo.
Baron Zemo, I want to point out here.
To be honest, if we have to go down that road, Baron Zemo was just basically developing super glue.
Well, I don't know what was happening with his face in this movie, but he had some weird cheekbone drapes that looked like maybe his mask was just growing out of his face.
Could well, that may be in the next one, you know, maybe in
cheekbone drapes is a term I just came up with.
Perhaps Zemo will appear in Black Panther.
They look more like vertical blinds to me, but I'll give you drapes.
There's only so much mileage you can get out of claw.
That's true.
If you combine two of the most intrinsically lame characters, Claw and Zemo, in an action-packed movie like that, and punch them up with a modern spin, I think you might have something. But also, it just occurred to me that Baron Zemo was actually the inspiration for Weird Harold on Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, because he also had his stocking cap permanently glued to his face.
At least he had the wherewithal to cut holes in the eye, so good for him.
And he hadn't pulled it all the way down, so at least he could talk.
So other than the entry cartoon, what are you looking
at? I was just so into the pre-show, I forgot to even... I left
11 minutes in, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. I got up and left. I didn't realize there was a movie after all that. Their pre-shows are dynamite.
But, they are.
But yeah, the trailers and commercials and stuff, I think, really did a lot to get me excited in exactly the way the previews and trailers for our previous discussion, Batman v Superman, did not.
All right.
I mean, I was pumped for this. I was already more pumped for this movie anyway. It didn't need the help. But, you know, sometimes you get that little extra. It's like the Humongous in Road Warrior. You crank that nitrous oxide in there, and all of a sudden, you know, it takes an already mean machine and takes it to the next level.
Where are you going tonight? Where have you been?
I am back, baby.
Oh,
he's looking for directions. How about you, Andy?
Well, if Cold Bull Elephant Houston is done. No, for me, like, I had two things. Like, number one, I felt the right amount of excited for what I had seen. You know, it was one of those where I watched the trailers and I was, okay, all right, so we've got, you know, because you see the standoff between the two groups, and I'm like, okay, I was trepidatious, and I feel semi-rightfully so, but I was trepidatious that there was so many heroes in here. Because when you start looking at it, like, even from the previews, if you look at the last Avengers movie, you only had 7 heroes. In this, you had a solid 10 plus heroes at once, and I'm like, this could go sideways pretty hard. So I'm going to go in with a grain of salt.
And you never knew when somebody else was going to get thrown in the mix.
Like, waka waka, like it was like Rowan and Martin's Laughing, the Captain America movie. It knocks on a door and sticks his head out, says.
And of course, spoiler alert all around. If you haven't seen the movie yet, then you shouldn't be this far into the show anyway.
That's right.
But he mentions. I guess as far as previews, even though the latest version of the Hulk is one of my favorite characters ever, I was really nervous that they were going to bring him in too, and just everyone
kind of a last minute addition.
Yeah.
Hulk not like Civil War.
Right.
Hulk have no patience for 15-hour movie.
Yeah, Hulk just wants us all to be friends.
And then I saw the preview with Spider-Man in it. I saw the clip with Spider-Man in it, and I was like, and literally my reaction was, shit. Damn it, guys, really? I know you're excited. I know you're excited that you got the ability to use Spider-Man, but I've never been a Spider-Man fan. I've never been a Spider-Man movie fan ever. Uh-huh. And I'm like,
you're afraid when you see that in the new clip. At the end there, he's like, under ruse, and you're just expecting like this giant shoehorn from Payless to come in and drop Spider-Man off.
Right.
I was worried that we were going to have to do somebody's origin. Because even though the Marvel movies are great about pointing at people and go, that's what their thing is, okay, fine. Spider-Man, they always feel compelled to do the freaking origin every single time.
I have a theory about that, but we'll get it. Let's wait till later in the show when we're talking about what we like and what we didn't like, because I feel I'm on both sides of that, and I want to know how you feel. But Catherine, what about you when you saw the previews for it?
When I saw the previews, like I said, I was kind of concerned about Spider-Man, because Spider-Man is like. In my opinion, like inserting somebody like Deadpool into something like X-Men, which granted, you can put some X-Men in Deadpool, but you can't put X-Men in, you can't do it the other way around. You know? You can't have a serious bad boy kick-ass thriller and have moments of just
You can't have Deadpool come walk and stick his head in off camera, you know, from one end of the pane there, and say, "Oh, hi guys, it's Deadpool. I'll let you get back to your movie."
Right.
Who ordered the salami sandwich and then just leaves? Like, what?
Yeah. He just pulls the salami out of his pants and drops it like a mic, you know.
Leaves. What did I just witness?
I was nervous about the you know, the hi guys, what you doing?
Yeah.
kind of
how I would have written it myself. He's a prankster, that Spider-Man. Oh, gotta love him. How did I live this long?
Otherwise, I was kind of wondering, and of course, I had not read the comic series, how they were going to get everybody to mortally hate each other and then make all nice in the span of 2.5 hours. But
I see. You know,
that's why I went to go see the movie.
And for me, the lines that you can draw between this movie and Batman versus Superman are very strong.
Oh yes.
When it comes to that kind of thing,
Talk about that.
Okay. Well, for me, it still didn't quite get there because I don't think you can do it in 2.5 hours.
No.
I don't think you can build that kind of animosity in 2.5 hours. But I will say this, they did a much better job of it in Captain America than they did Batman versus Superman.
The animosity seemed to come out of absolutely nowhere. At least there was a catalyst. When somebody goes and throws the giant, the big book over port cord thing on your lap, which frankly, from documents like that, it should have been much thicker. I think they could have spent a few more bucks on the budget, throwing some more paper in there, but that's just weird.
Just says stop it over and over again. So yeah. They do whatever they want. I guess it's just how many times you write the word stop it over and over again. But yeah, for me, it was like, okay, so we got this rather unknown bad guy in Baron Zemo, right? And Helmut Zemo, and he's not. It was hard for me to believe that he was capable of doing this. Like, and at least he says in there, at least he doesn't have that Luther turn. At least he says in there, I have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, and you can accomplish almost anything with those two things. So he was a good manipulator for this story, but it seemed like either guy, like, okay, so Cap has been alive for 90 years, saved the world how many times that we know of? At least 5. Iron Man has done the same essentially, and is a few, as Hawkeye points out so brilliantly in the movie, a futurist. You think one of the two of them would stop at some point and go, something feels off here. Something doesn't feel right.
I think we're kind of getting manipulated, because who's easier to manipulate than Thunderbolt Ross? I mean, think about it.
Right.
He's got such a big, hate-on for Hulk. Anybody thing that just sort of reminds you know what's really Hulk-like, General? What's that? What Hulk? When do I say Hulk? The Avengers are kind of Hulk-like. And they showed him that video that he showed them so glibly. And he's like, oh my God, I hadn't thought about that. There's like the Hulk. I hate the Hulk. I hate Hulk worse than the dogs in Up hate squirrels.
I also hate the fact that literally no importance or no blame fell on the alien races, supervillains, robotic evil AI or otherwise that were completely implicit in the destructions of these things.
Speaking of implicit,
I think so. I mean,
I think one thing that was implicit was T'Chaka, bearing an olive branch instead of a spear.
Right.
When he's addressing the UN, implies at least that he's at least somewhere behind all this fervor. He's thinking, old Crossbones there, if the Avengers hadn't shown up, would have had a biological weapon of mass destruction in his hands. Against 11 of my countrymen,
right?
Is it really that big a price to pay?
Right.
Also, I mean, it's like take a fire breaks out and you grab a fire extinguisher and put the fire out. It's like they come in, look what a huge mess you made. There's powder everywhere.
Oh, God, there is. There's powder everywhere with those damn things.
So that bothered me from the get-go.
Yeah, no one seemed to know they were being gamed.
And Cap didn't raise his hand at some point and go, I think if you'll look back around 1939, the Red Skull was there before me. The Red Skull was, Elrond pulled off his mask and he was all red and bony long before I showed up over there in Normandy. So why don't you relax?
It was old Red's guys who were coming to get me or at least get my formula.
Right.
From Professor Guy from Hunger Games.
Right, right. So everybody needs to relax on this. You guys are the reason these guys are coming. Stupid Vision. Shut up. What do you know?
Well, the only one that's here because of us is you.
Right, right. You and you've got an infinity gem planted firmly in your skull.
Yeah.
So shut
the hell
up.
That's just like putting a big sign out at Earth. Hey, come and get it, Thanos!
The
this one's right here on display in a guy's head.
Vision's costuming was awesome.
Oh my god.
Because what they did was they borrowed from the new Vision where he was suburbia and he had a family, like a nuclear family that he had, like the 2.5 kids and everything, and that's the way he dressed. He dressed like Ward Cleaver all the time.
Oh yeah, I love
that. So I thought they did great,
Vision.
Except for the times when it looked like he was going to break into an 8-bit MIDI version of Volare at some point. Like, too far.
I was waiting for him to offer you coffee or something. And
right.
Yeah, he was absolutely perfect in that role.
I mean, the casting is still phenomenal. And the casting that they did on the new cast. So what did we like about it? I think we've covered all of that. Catherine, do you have any final thoughts on what was coming in before?
I was happy to see Getting Old Hawkeye.
Oh, they're all looking a little old, though.
Getting Old Hawkeye. He's starting to look a little jowly.
Yeah.
Natalia's hanging in there.
But she's not like she was. Like, when you look at her next to the new hot Scarlet Witch, you're kind of you're kind of hitting
I'm glad you brought up Scarlet Witch. I mean, nothing against chick who plays Scarlet Witch, but to me, she is the least remotely close to what I would see as the cinematic version of Scarlet.
Well, I like her sometimes accent.
So,
that's what I like.
Yeah. Occasionally, I remember I'm from a foreign country.
That's right.
But, she and Quicksilver both were just so...
What accent is that? Oh, it's Brigadoon.
Right.
She fits more the part of, like, Cosette all grown up if she never left innkeepers, being run by the innkeeper.
Hey,
okay.
If Jean Valjean had never showed up, that's what Cosette would look like.
Times are real hard in Orange County, Vakia, all right? You gotta give her a break. No, but I thought, Robert Downey Jr.'s looking rough.
Except in CG Weird Science County. Era.
Uncanny.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like they pulled his head off of Weird Science and CG'd it into Captain America.
That was less than zero Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. That was not called for, okay? Just period creepy. Don't open on that, okay?
Yeah.
Do not open on that creepy shit. I don't want to see it.
I guess that way they've amped up the creep factor to the point they're nothing. I mean, if they did the next Captain America movie and you got MODOK, and people said, man, that MODOK was so creepy, well, watch the beginning of Captain America Civil War. And, oh, yeah, you're right.
Well, I just finished Wayward Pines, and the main villain in Wayward Pines is the same guy that plays Arnim Zola.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to, every time I'm like, Arnim Zola! There he is! Every time.
I had to let Wayward Pines go. I'm sorry. When it turned into future animal people, then I'm like, I gotta
go.
That's
when they got me. That's real. That's what really happened.
That was my buy now.
What, did it turn into Leonard Nimoy's Primordials?
It kind of did. Okay, it kind of after a fashion it did.
How's that for a reference?
I want to know what Catherine we don't say this to be mean, but with very little understanding of the source material, I think that's fair. How did you feel? What did you like about it? Do you think that they achieved their goal?
I think they did. As someone who had not read the comic series, the concept of the movie was easy enough to follow without spoon feeding it to you.
Right.
When you go into a superhero movie like that, you expect 85% fighting or better. And you got that. And the fights were really good. initially you just got the knockdown drag outs, but later you got the moments with a little bit of humor, but not too much humor.
Right.
You had a few good lines that you always, you should expect from a movie like that, like less talking, more fighting. And what was it? The shock that Giant Man was very, very large.
Yes.
And a few other quips that were fun when you're in the moment of the big massive brawl. I really appreciated the fact that Natalia Romanova, they kept the same actress. and that they are letting her be a little bit older and more experienced.
Yes.
And so, and this, she's using her experience as her strong card, versus her, I mean, she can still kick ass, but she's very, very clever and very, very resourceful. And I think not waving the woman flag too high, but I think that's great because, you're letting Downey get older and rougher. You're getting a lot of the character, a lot of the actors, the men actors can age and still be superheroes. Older actors can still be James Bond. They can still be
right.
Batman. I like to see an older actress be a very, very resourceful, smart hero.
Well, also,
they don't just kick her to the curb or not include her just because she's not youthful anymore.
Or, right. Or worse yet, trade up to a different actress.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think that, I would like to think that maybe is this coming generation's, better attitude toward, I don't know, I don't want to call it age discrimination, but maybe, a respect for what older people have to offer. I don't know.
I would agree with that. No, I think
it's a solid thing because, you know, it is so easy for the studio to say, well, they've aged out. We need to find somebody else to pick it up. And I think what this did well, you know, you were speaking earlier, Andrew, about the weighty cast.
Yes.
Almost unwieldy seeming at first glance. And what it did very well is balance that weighty cast by giving everybody some decent air. You know, it wasn't like anybody had like, oh my God, we forgot all about War Machine. We got to get him in a quick scene here. I mean, everybody played a part. They all had a legitimate
yeah.
role to play in this, and it wasn't, I don't think anybody felt shoehorned in, especially the one who was shoehorned in, and that's Spider-Man, thanks to the Sony Accords, which was also a contract.
Which is a different, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually thicker than the Sokovia Accord, just to make this happen. But
it's the first time his outfit has ever made sense to me.
Yes, it very much a Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends approach to
right.
suiting him up. But what was smart is it's Stark who discovers him. It has a lot of the flavor of one of the better elements of Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, coming in and befriending somebody who's got the smarts and all. Was very clever in that Peter was going out and doing what he could as Spider-Man with exactly what he'd be able to do it with, and that's Goodwill find clothing. And,
yeah, dumpster diving.
Yeah, because it would be enough for him to build and fabricate his webbing material on a high school kid's budget.
Right.
You know,
right.
Actually somehow teaching yourself the intricate filigree of. You know, hand embroidered spider webbing.
Yeah, that's too much.
Yeah, I've always failed in the cinematic Spider-Mans to. There's a tremendous suspension of disbelief, like, you know, suspending a car by a sewing thread. But you have to kind of live with it. And I think this took a very smart approach. The banter between you see basically a young Tony Stark in the way you should have, not that creepy ass. 45 years de-aged.
Ugh, this is gross. Gross.
It was hyper-realistic, and at once, it was so realistic that it was very reminiscent of the way they, whittled Chris Evans down into little bitty Mr. Nothing.
Yes.
And only rarely on screen did it fail a little bit, like the scene where they're driving in the car with Sharon Carter.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And it just kind of almost fails a little bit, but then it gets back to looking bizarrely. This had that same feel. It was just bizarrely realistic, except this time it just creeped the hell out of you. Because, you know, you've never seen Chris Evans look like a scrawny, you know, like Ichabod Crane. You have seen Robert Downey Jr. look that young.
Correct, correct. And he did
screen.
Look a little like the dancing baby from Ally McBeal. I'm just saying.
All growed up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was a little nervous about Spider-Man because he was a last-minute addition. They literally pushed other movies back. They pushed this movie back, which people initially read as, oh, you know, the DC won the big battle on who's going to have that opening weekend. And the reality was it didn't matter when, you know, the outcome would have been much the same either way.
Right.
People were going to go see both. But the fact that they moved everything around just so they could get Spider-Man in, it didn't feel like anything they did with Spider-Man was done just because they could.
Right, right. And I also liked getting to see Ant-Man again.
Yes.
He was great.
And he had the same wonderful enthusiasm, goofy enthusiasm. They didn't make him change his personality, which I thought was really neat.
Yeah, he was breakaway for me. I loved Black Panther. I thought Black Panther was amazing.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Spider-Man, I think they did actual justice to, but for me, every time Ant-Man is on screen, he gets more well-rounded, more defined, funnier, more apropos to being in the situations he finds himself in. I really like that he is becoming a part of this universe in such a big way.
What's wonderful about the way the synergy of the Marvel movies, what's brilliant is by and large the tentpole heroes, the guys that got their own films, when they enter into other films, when they make a cameo in somebody else's movie, or when they are brought together for the Avengers, or in this case, you know, when they got the whole band back together for this, every single character acts the way they did in their own movie. Thor doesn't turn into this director's Thor.
Right.
Captain America doesn't become this other director's Captain America just for the duration. They don't change. There's a very smart approach to playing these characters the way the audience wants to see them played. So that's why the Avengers worked. Every single character was on point.
It was consistency.
Yeah.
That consistency really makes a difference.
And I think it's the kind of consistency you see on television programs where directors come and go.
Right.
Even from episode to episode. But, you know, the characters don't suddenly switch gears. Well, this is my vision for this week on how, you know, this particular character is going to act this week. No, you don't do that. That's how you lose audience.
But there's consistency with growth. And I think that's my favorite thing about these movies is the Captain America that was in Civil War is not the Captain America that was in First Avengers. The Iron Man that was in Civil War is not the same Iron Man we saw at the beginning, because they've grown as characters.
That's
a good
point.
And they folded that into each movie.
Exactly.
So Hawkeye went from being in Thor the S.H.I.E.L.D. assassin guy to being family man that has to come out of retirement to help his friends.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's this movie. You know, Iron Man went from being a teetering war profiteer in the first movie to being racked with guilt in this movie. You know, so I think that's, and like you said about Black Widow, we're seeing this metamorphosis of, you know, ass kicker from the Iron Man movies that she appeared in to kind of, and I hate to say this because it's, you know, cisgender bullshit, but to being almost a more, master spy matriarchal role where she's providing the information, she's teaching people.
I agree completely.
Well, she's very much the role she took on in Winter Soldier.
Right, right.
Where she's having to kind of be, you know, Captain America understands the military side of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he didn't really understand the covert side.
Right.
Well, I don't think that referring to a woman as a teacher is sexist at all.
Well, I did say matriarchal, and that's a little bit sexist.
Well, I mean, you don't necessarily have to use the term matriarchal. You can just use elder, teacher, guide.
But I see her becoming an M, like an M type character from you know, the Judy Dench, James Bond M. Eventually, down the road,
I think she's going to become like the ad hoc or the replacement Nick Fury.
That would be amazing. That would be great.
If she took over for Nick Fury, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, I would like to see, you know, if I had my way, I would like to see let's pull our heads out of our asses and get over the whole Hydra thing and rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. from the ashes.
Well, I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
I think that that's what's coming, because there wasn't a lot of Hydra in this outside of the fact that...
Yeah, it's sort of mentioned in passing.
Outside of the fact that Winter Soldier, Hydra, you know, blah, blah. But it wasn't a Hydra-centric movie. It was...
And thank God for that, because that was getting just a little old.
But, and Spider-Man for me was I've never liked Spider-Man in movies ever.
Yeah,
I've hated Spider-Man. I think that the kid that they got to play it was phenomenal. He resonated in my mind with the way Spider-Man is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, that is Spider-Man. Like, just excited to be involved.
Uh-huh.
You know, just happy to be on the field. Just, oh my God! Like, that's
I can go to Bangladesh. I have a test tomorrow.
That's right. Cole, how you? I'm curious to know how you compare, because you talked about Spider-Man coming in on a giant shoehorn, right? Like that.
Well, that was my fear. That was my fear. Is that?
But how do you compare the introduction of two major characters and what would be a major villain? Well, two major villains, for that matter. To, let's say, a Batman versus Superman, and the way that they introduced.
Okay. Yeah. As far as I think that. Batman vs. Superman, the biggest problem is it suffers tremendously from trying to be... Okay, here's a good corollary, a good analog. You know, since I do Convention Awareness Project Texas, I see a lot of conventions that have been around long before Cap Texas.
Right.
That I watched grow from little bitty tabletop shows that eventually brought in a guest or two to, you know, giant... you know, just juggernauts that then got sold to companies that made them even bigger juggernauts and in some ways sucked all the joy out of it. But, you know, the big think right now in conventions is have a crap ton of guests.
Right.
And but the thing of it is, that's because these are shows that grew that from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of shows that come in and want to be that all over the nation. They want to be that from day one.
Right.
And that's what Batman Superman was. They wanted to be the Marvel movies. Warner wanted the Marvel movies, but they didn't want to have to earn it. And
So you can't do that overnight.
Captain America, you know, even with the ton of characters, even with new characters being thrown into the mix, it's not like you're being thrown into a mix that's just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those Vietnamese hot pots. You know, you don't throw everything in at once, otherwise the shrimp turns into leather, and some stuff doesn't get cooked at all.
Honestly, I think Avengers was such a huge hit. Well, not only, of course, it was a phenomenal movie. I really loved it. But you had people going to see it who may just be Iron Man fans.
Right.
Or just be this fans or just be that fans. And you had all sorts of, you know, they couldn't give two shakes about the Hulk, but they really loved this other character. You started developing an appreciation for characters that you never really cared for in the past.
Right.
And that's the brilliance of it, I think.
And for me, it's that everybody in Captain America Civil War had a reason to be there.
Yes.
We were given the reason. We didn't need the origin necessarily.
Yeah.
We still don't know Spider-Man's origin. Well, I mean, we know it, but, you know, in terms of that... You know, in terms of that universe, in terms of where we're living in that space, we also don't know Black Panther's origin. Is it magic? Because there were some instances in Marvel where it was magic. Is it just the suit? Is it a super soldier serum? We don't know. We just know he kicks ass.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What we know. But he had a reason to be there.
He can show up and kick some serious ass, and that's okay. And we don't have to know everything there is to know about Wakanda. We know that's where vibranium comes from. In the same way, Tanzanite comes only from Tanzania for some inexplicable reason. Who knew when they named it that it would turn out to be... in Tanzania. But
well, I thought the Black Panther was brilliant because it was a legacy. Okay, it was passed down to father and son. So he's going to have the suit. He's going to have all the training from since he could walk.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have the whole persona and all the skills because he's been trained for this day the same way a prince is trained to be a king.
Right.
And so he could step into it. He could hop into that suit immediately and be that overnight. And,
well,
that
and I think what we saw in this movie, and here's my theory, right? We didn't get Spider-Man's origin because this happens after the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, we didn't get the Black Panther's origin because the Black Panther has been the Black Panther, like you said. He's been defending his country since birth, or since whenever the last Black Panther handed it down, whatever, you know, 10 or 7 years prior to the movie.
Right.
So we're catching up with them after they've already been these characters.
Right.
So, and that's all that needs to be known. I've been there. I'll kill him myself. How are you going to do that? Oh, you watched me.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Same way I killed all those other guys. I said I'd kill them myself.
That's right.
I'll think of something. And Vision and Scarlet Witch, I only knew them by name. I'd never seen them other than the cover of a comic book. I had never read a story with them at all.
Right.
I only knew them by, I were familiar with the name. And there they were, and they were cool, and I had no idea where they came from. But I didn't care because I liked them, and they fit in with the storyline. So, yay!
Right. And how do you feel about the portrayal? There's a few things about Black Panther that I want to talk about, because I think that Black Panther in this movie is what they is what should have happened if they wanted to make Wonder Woman a successful character in Batman versus Superman.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about the fact that, like Catherine mentioned, there's the implicit indication that he's been at this a long-ass time. You know, this wasn't his first rodeo. And you see that brilliantly played out in the nature of, like, you know, when the helicopter gunship comes in and just blasting away at him and Winter Soldier, he just sort of like turns around as if like somebody threw a rock at him. And he's like, how dare you? And it's like, that to me is what's so brilliant.
It was excuse me look.
Yeah. It was like, what the?
Oh, no, you didn't.
Are you shooting me? You know, what are you thinking? And there's that level of confidence in everything he does, every single move. I mean, he is, when you see him in pursuit of Winter Soldier, they are literally the same.
Yes.
They are well-trained, well-seasoned, and nothing is going to stop them. They are single-minded at this point. You know, like where Bucky grabs that motorcycle.
Oh, that was so cool.
And, you know, hurls the rider off and takes it for himself. And you
that
know,
was gorgeous.
That was right up there with like yanking the steering wheel out of the car in Winter Soldier. You know,
yes.
Just on the fly, the best possible thing you can do given what you're presented with. And both of those characters are cut from the same cloth. And you see that without ever having to have an origin story. And, you know, thankfully, Winter Soldier's origin story is just sort of given to you in little snippets, as well it should be. We don't need to see Arnim Zola experimenting
right.
on him.
Did you guys hear, this is a legitimate question, did you guys hear the Black Panther's theme in the movie at all?
I wouldn't recognize it if I heard it.
Exactly. Exactly. Do you remember my bitch about Wonder Woman's theme? How it was so jarring. How every time that they wanted to shoehorn in Wonder Woman, it would be like,
yeah.
Like,
oh, by the way, in case you didn't notice, Wonder Woman's here.
Exactly.
I get what you're saying. It's not so much as the theme song she's had from past shows, but. The movie's own personal
right.
Here She Comes theme.
That weird Greek, like, zither music that they would jam up your ass every time that she would break the curtain on the stage right, and it was... and then there she was. He had a theme, and it was very, you know, tribal and drum-heavy, but they wove it into the rest of the score so beautifully that you...
Yeah, it wasn't like, it was sort of like the, you know, like Vader coming in and you hear this sort of, dum, 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 you know, little lilts of the Imperial theme, without it being like, dun, 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 here comes Vader. You know?
Right. And I think that speaks volumes to what the movie was, because they didn't need that. They didn't need any nods. The Black Panther, you knew immediately. It's like, oh, he's the Black Panther. Let me show you in the first 5 minutes why he's the Black Panther. And he moved the
the movement choreography for that was so brilliant and beautiful. He moved like a cat. Like, all of the movements were cat-like. He never made a sound when he hit the ground. It just...
Oh, yeah.
Boom. He was just on the ground. You never made a sound. You heard Captain America land on his shield. You know, Bucky falls out of a window and lands. It's like, thud. And then he lands and it just whispers. And he's gone. It's like, holy shit. This is awesome. But, yeah, that was the perfect way to introduce a character.
You bring him in and you bring him in full bore.
Right.
I want to see more of that character. I really hope he gets his own standalone.
Well, he's got it. It's coming. Next year it's coming. So he's getting his own standalone movie. He's going to be a major in Avengers version 2, you know, Avengers point 2, he's going to be a major player in that, on that team. So he's going to be in those Avengers movies, which is going to be great, because I think that for me, he is the most well-rounded breakaway character that they've introduced yet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to, and I think the day's going to come. It's probably, it might be a few years away, but ultimately, I would like the general population as moviegoers to be so familiar with these characters that you can almost make a Tuesday afternoon type of movie featuring these characters when the world isn't necessarily in crisis, but there's crap going on that needs to be fixed anyway. And I would really like to see something like that, where Ant-Man might be hanging out at somebody's house and get a call from fill in the blank hero. It doesn't have to be a headliner, just a C-list, and ask them for help with some drug dealers or something like that. I think I'd really enjoy seeing something like that, more of a superhero CSI kind of thing.
A day in the life type of...
Yeah, yeah, just a Thursday afternoon, what you doing? Well, no, you're doing this.
Yeah.
Like, you need to move, so you call Ant-Man so he can turn into Giant Man and, like, move your piano for you.
Well, and they had fun with what came before as well, like him throwing the truck.
Throw it at this.
And it referenced back without having to say, we did this before with the, like, no, shut up, it's okay, just go with it.
I love his reverence towards the characters, like when they pull him, like when Hawkeye pulls him out of the van and he's talking to Cap and he's so just enamored with being in front of Cap, and then he looks over at Falcon and he's like, hey, sorry about what happened, and he's like, it's a one-time thing, it'll never happen again.
Exactly.
Reverence and just the kind of awe and the feeling of unbelonging, yet he keeps proving himself over and over again. Like,
that was what worked so well also with having Spider-Man in one camp and Ant-Man in the other.
Yes.
You have both these characters who are just about to piss themselves because neither of them can believe. It's like some high school kid. Somebody in the majors, I don't know baseball, but somebody is out, maybe not the first tier star, but like even a second tier star is like, could you come in and hit for us?
Right.
Sure, but this is crazy.
Exactly. So what didn't we like about it? I mean, I think that we liked a lot of, but I think that overwhelmingly we liked this movie. But was there any sticking points?
This is just kind of really petty, but I guess this is my overall sticking point on many plots like this is when everybody, all of a sudden everything goes south and. Friends all get mad at each other and they polarize.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is when they initially had the split up and SmackDown is at the end of the day, you're not going to mortally cripple or kill your friends 5 minutes ago over a disagreement like this. It's not like they've you know, they're possessed by evil spirits or, you know, they have to be stopped for...
That's Doctor Strange.
At all costs. So it's the you would hope, at the very least, that they would be pulling their punches and just trying to get the hate out of their system and not necessarily really severely damage each other.
But I think... Go ahead. I'm sorry, Catherine.
And then at the... of course, you the last time everybody saw each other was this incredible hate fest. And then the next time they see each other, they're really, really quick to let that drop.
Well, I think they let it drop because they knew they'd been played. I mean,
but they let it drop probably before anybody had a chance to explain why.
But I think they were pulling their punches, and I think that was
it's even brought up. One of the lines talks about somebody pulling their punches.
Well, Natasha and Hawkeye are fighting, and they're just kind of going through the motions. It's almost like a sparring drill. None of them are doing too much to hurt each other. And Scarlet Witch throws Natasha against the wall or whatever, and yells, "You know, quit pulling your punches." But I think they were all kind of pulling their punches. I think if you look at Hawkeye, why was he there? He was there because Cap asked him for help. Yeah. That was why he was there. Why was the only two people that I think really had any real animosity toward each other at that point were Iron Man and Cap. Everybody else had to choose a side. They didn't necessarily want to be there, but they were there.
And I think also with Iron Man and Cap, in that dynamic was incumbent on Bucky.
Right.
I mean, to Cap, this guy may have been the Winter Soldier, but that wasn't his fault. He shouldn't have to, as Bucky Barnes, be completely accountable for the action of this creature that Arnim Zola and Hydra created in him.
I think
T'Challa understood that because he takes them in. And the thing is, at this point, this is also a story of Tony becoming so blinded by guilt that all he sees is... You know, you're opposing that which is right. Don't you feel the guilt?
And how can it be, of all people, to oppose what's right? And I think this was it took the second viewing to really get this from the portrayal of from Tony's, you know, from the acting, from the delivery. But how can you, Captain America, of all people, be opposed to what's right? You're the archetype of right. You're the beacon of virtue. This is obviously right. Look at what I've done. You know, look at what my ego has wrought. Look at the hubris that I feel, and you can't see it. You're obviously wrong, and you're supposed to be the one. You've always been right, and now you're wrong. How can you be this wrong? You know, and there was that frustration there.
Yeah.
It's very cool. If you see it again, watch for that, because it's a very cool thing to watch for. And also, Catherine, and I know this doesn't help you because there's no way that they could do this in the movie, but maybe an explanation. Uh-huh. What you saw in the movie, and this was a frustration for me that I know that there's no way they can fix, because nobody wants a Lord of the Rings-style 9-hour Civil War movie.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you how this compared to the actual comics.
It compared very well in the sense that this was the first third of Civil War.
So what
happens is in the comics, it was a school that exploded and took out a bunch of kids, which is much more galvanizing in my mind than taking out 11 Wakandans in a facility. They tried to
heap more of that into the fact that others died in Sarkovia and other places.
Right.
But,
I can see how they didn't want to do a bunch of small child dead bodies for a movie.
Right. No, for sure.
So,
and so what you got was, you know, the Superhuman Registration Act is what they called it in the comics, where Tony Stark spearheaded this thing where all the superhumans and all the superheroes had to register their true identities.
Oh.
That's what caused the schism.
Okay.
And Cap was on the side.
It wasn't just a bureaucracy thing. It was a total hand over your liberty.
Right. And there's a bunch of other liberties that they were giving up. They had to be assigned teams in every state. There was a whole thing. But that caused the schism. A bunch of heroes sided with Cap. A bunch of them sided with Iron Man. Way more than five or six in 5 and 6. What we saw was the initial schism form and then the first fight that caused Cap to really go rogue and underground. Okay. So for me, that was the frustration, is when he breaks his people out of prison to go underground with him and fight this fight on the low, that's when the fun really starts.
Okay. And so this is like the first of a trilogy almost.
Right. And I'm wondering if we're going to get, you know, when they come into the next Avengers movie, you know, I wonder if we're going to get some of that just ADR backstory about how Cap's been on the lam with these people, you know, fighting crime his own way.
Yeah.
And then Tony has to call him in because the big bad is here and he needs all the help he can get. So he calls in.
Now we have to, like, jettison all of this because there's something far more important.
The real reasons that the Avengers was created was to take on enemies that none of them could take on by themselves. So that's the pure definition of the Avengers. But yeah, that was frustrating for me because I'm like, the movie's stopping right where it gets good in the comics. You know, because you get like this, in the comics, the Fantastic Four splits down the middle. You know, you have half the Fantastic Four with Cap and half with Iron Man. You get, you know, all kinds of weird breakups and awesome dynamic that you're not getting in this. But they did their best to portray that, I think. When you put Natasha and Hank, or Natasha and Hawkeye on either side of the battle, you take I think that they did a really good job of laying that out, but you don't get the real fun yet.
Well, that's a great insight. That really, really helps me a lot, because where I was at was, and of course, since you explained it, it makes a whole lot more sense. But where I was at before was, like, okay, you have a group of friends, and two of your friends get a divorce. There's a few friends that are always on either side, but the majority of the friends step back and say, I love you both. I can't choose. If either one of you needs help, let me know.
Right.
And that's what I kind of expected of this group of people. You've got somebody who's, you know, there's a couple people that are always going to be on Cap's side no matter what. Mm-hmm. Same with Iron Man. But you've got the newbies that don't know either one of them enough to go
I think it's
like that. And you also have ones that care enough about them not to want to polarize like that.
Right.
Well, the thing about it is, I think you're oversimplifying it in the sense of, and it's easy to do, that it's just the Cap versus Iron Man. But it's really the ideologies. What Tony sees is, because I think he sees a bit of himself in this accord, in that, you know, he's gone out with reckless abandon. He told the Congress they could go fuck themselves, you know, to Senator Hyder there. I think that once he had it thrown in his face, the consequences of just, you know, flying around the world with impunity, with, you know, heavy ordnance, blasting up bad guys, it doesn't mean that people aren't caught in the crossfire, and I don't think he'd ever slowed down enough to realize that. Cap's been on the battlefield.
Right.
He knows that if you want to put a bullet in Hydra's, you know, the head of a Hydra agent, occasionally you're going to hit a peasant.
Right.
And that's the cost of war, and ultimately this is becoming a war of the superhumans. And though it's never really expressed, it's certainly implied that it's who's coming in on what side of the ideology, who is willing to surrender self-determination to a, you know, even an entity like the UN, as sweeping as that is, who is, it's in their nature to want to help. Who's going to want to sit on their hands when, you know, Arnim Zola resurfaces, or Radioactive Man, or the Wrecking Crew, for God forbid we ever get them on the big screen.
Right, you're waiting on a phone call from the UN to go take action. I think Cap says it, you know,
These things can't be decided by committee.
And I also, kind of an observation, Captain America is a trained soldier. I can't say the word, but he's a soldier. And a truly trained, disciplined soldier totally knows and feels the difference between when they're in a battlefield in a state of war and when they're not, you know, when it's a civilian life.
Right.
And it's two totally different sets of rules. And a soldier can go back and forth like that and has the self-discipline to do so, whereas somebody with superpowers who isn't necessarily that disciplined, you know, doesn't stop and think twice about the situation they're in before they take out the drug dealer on the corner as to who might get caught in a crossfire. That's a major difference between Tony Stark and Captain America.
Oh, I totally agree. Cap, I think they're both coming from a different place of ego, where Cap's like, I'm 90 years old. I fought in World War II. I've also fought aliens. I've also fought robotic AI. I've led this team. You know, the good that we've done so greatly outweighs the bad that I think that I've proven myself as a battlefield leader. We don't need this oversight, you know. And then Tony is on the other hand saying, you know, well, we obviously do because we've taken out all these innocent lives. And Cap's thinking to himself, that is war. That's what happened.
Well, Cap is like I was saying earlier, Cap is seeing the end game, that if they hadn't gone on that clandestine mission to stop Crossbones and his crew, they would have had a dangerous weapon at their disposal and have no compunction whatsoever about who wound up with it.
Right.
And, you know, that's why I was saying I think that it's not really expressed, but I think there's this implication that T'Chaka understood that. But he also understood the bully pulpit that is the UN or any sort of group where you have enough opinion swaying in one direction, it doesn't matter how much you beat on the, you know, try to drive home the reality of the situation.
Right.
This was just the latest affront, the latest situation. And it doesn't help that the Tony Stark kind of created Ultron and...
Right, that he feels that guilt, you know?
Yeah.
So he is
heavily driven to the point of a blind devotion to this, to reining everybody in. And what's really at work with Tony is he recognizes he needs to be reined in.
Right.
And
yeah.
in that,
yeah.
he's imposing that on everyone else. He's just sort of grabbing everyone else up in that sphere of guilt.
Right.
Right. Because he is mistranslating his own lack of self-discipline into other people's lack of self-discipline. He's assuming that if he can't control his own actions, no one else can either, and that's...
Exactly. Everybody else must be a loose cannon as well, so...
Exactly, and that is...
The loose cannon club needs to be...
Well, anyway, that's a political discussion for another time.
So the only other real beef I had with the movie, and it's a very small one considering the movie that we've been comparing it to, mm-hmm. is as much as I liked Spider-Man, I the only problem I have is with I feel like there could have been more to explain why he was there. It's obvious that, you know, I think when they brought him in, it was very well done. I think that the point at which he was brought in as, you know, a recruit of Tony Stark was from that point on, it was very good. I would have liked something to discuss how Tony came to realize that Spider-Man was this thing. I know that we were supposed to imagine and understand and take for granted or at least, you know, understand that Tony has the ability to know most things at most of the time. You know, that he has the...
Well, I mean, Spider-Man has been in the press, so Spider-Man is not a secret. So I think that him tracking down who Spider-Man was, he has the resources to do. But I kind of justified the fact that he decided to bring Spider-Man in at this time is because he's feeling like lower than low idiot man, and he kind of sees Peter Parker as maybe a chance to do it right. A next generation, somebody he can mentor, and somebody he can support to, you know, do things better than he did.
I completely agree. I completely agree with that. What I would have liked though is one line maybe of ADR. I don't even care how they did it, but let's say, I think the perfect opportunity to do it would have been when Thunderbolt Ross was giving his grand speech at Avengers Mansion, and just throw in a line, you know, because he's talking about how all of these superpower people are coming out of the woodwork, mm-hmm. and just say something about, like, you know, and we've got guys dressed like spiders running around New York City, just to set the stage, so it wasn't like, oh, look, this is how they're going to bring, you know, all of a sudden he's like, I know a guy in Brooklyn or Queens, and the next scene is him sitting with Marissa Tomei in somebody's living room. You know, just be like, oh, okay. So Spider-Man is a known quantity at this point going into this conversation. That is the only thing that I would have changed about the introduction of any character in this movie, which is so far beyond better than Batman versus Superman. I can't even begin to describe it, but it's such a petty bitch, but it's the only one that I had. Where I'm like, wait, are we supposed to? Okay, so Tony, let me do some mental gymnastics to get to the point where, okay, so he's got satellites. Maybe you can put it together by his, you know, tracking his patterns and his body. Okay, whatever, biometrics. Who knows? Okay, fine, fair enough.
I think what you've got is, you know, Tony, like Peter's trying to say, well, you know, it's on the internet. You know, that's all fake. Mm-hmm. And I think Tony's got the technology and everything to distinguish. Between, he's like, look at this, like, oh, you know, people are going to think this is faked. But I can tell. I don't need the Mythbusters to come and figure this one out. I can tell looking at it that it's real. That's amazing. He probably had people go out and find, like, okay, this is a street corner where this, you know, this mm-hmm. accident was averted. And he probably had people go out and find the leftover webbing, and so you can analyze
web scrapings are probably common in that day.
And then you got to figure, okay, you know, it's a big city, but there's only so much. So, you know, he probably worked out, oh, here's where all the Spider-Man sightings were. Anything, you know, whether it was captured, chronicled mm-hmm. or not, there would be, you know, you could. He's got the resources to get people to put together all of the, people. He could just have Friday do it for him.
Right. Well, sure, of course. And you know, we are to understand that, and I do, and it makes sense. I the only thing I would have liked would have been just a little nod towards the beginning, saying that Spider-Man exists in this universe, and you're going to see him later. Like just a little setup. But other than that, I'm fine with it. Like it was. I thought the kid they got to play Spider-Man was great.
Oh, he was perfect.
I think he played Spider-Man perfectly. Like, I was never happy about a Spider-Man until this movie. Like, I think that he did, you know, when Falcon is gummed up against the wall there, and he's like, hey, just so you know, kid, I know you haven't been in many fights, but there's usually less talking. Usually there's less talking. You know, I think that those interactions, you had the Spider-Man, Empire Strikes Back line in the movie, which was, I thought, brilliant. Just a brilliant way to kind of show that he was a, you know, just so young. Like that old movie, Empire Strikes Back, where they do the thing with the wall. Like, that was great.
yes, I loved that.
But that showed where their hearts really were.
Yeah.
The best scene in the entire movie for me wasn't any of the grand fight scenes. It wasn't when we saw Giant Man. I loved it, but that wasn't the best for me. It wasn't the Cap Bucky fight versus Iron Man, which was just epic, just insane. It was the scene where Cap and Spider-Man are fighting, and Cap drops the Skywalk on Spider-Man, and Spider-Man catches it.
Yes!
And he looks at him and he goes, hey, where are you from? And he says, Queens. And Captain America just looks at him and goes,
Brooklyn and runs off. That was the best scene
yes.
in the entire movie for me. Period. No, hands down, there wasn't a better scene. There hasn't been a better scene in a Marvel movie.
And I think one of the things that that scene does also is recognize that, you know, this Spider-Man kid is a recruit.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a dog in this fight.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear. I mean, Cap would be able to analyze everything this kid's doing. And realize, you know, this kid is just, he's just been recruited. He doesn't even know.
Was Captain America not a puny little kid in the
beginning? Yeah, he sees a bit of himself.
He totally relate, you know. Yeah.
That's true. And I think interactions like that and the one with here's the thing that Spider-Man did to this movie, and it goes back to what you were talking about, Catherine, was whose heart was in this fight? You know, Spider-Man was the heart of this fight. Spider-Man was the proof that nobody was going in guns blazing. You know, the only real collateral damage was by accident in this entire, in the entire giant fight that they had. And I think the real purpose of Spider-Man being brought into this was to show that these were heroes fighting with each other over an ideology.
Right.
You know, it wasn't an unbreachable chasm. It was, you know, it was an ideology, and you bring in the one kid who has no dog in the fight that's only there because Tony said, come with me. I'm Tony Stark. You idolize me. You know, I'll set you up if you come in here. You know, and he had no dog. He was just fighting. It was almost fun for him.
Yeah, this was like, I get to go play with the big leagues.
Well, you saw the cookie at the end, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Where he's nursing his eye and he got in a fight with a guy from Brooklyn.
Yeah, you should have seen the other guy.
His friend was huge. I mean, huge.
I think that shows what was really happening. Because I think if you don't bring Spider-Man in, I think if you don't bring a character like Spider-Man or have an Ant-Man, you know, and I think they serve very similar roles. And what you get is a real bloody knockdown, drag out, unrevocable break between the two sets of characters. When you have a character like Spider-Man or Ant-Man in there, it shows that, hey, this is just these are guys fighting because they have to.
Yeah.
And not necessarily because they want to. These are friends fighting over ideology, which we see all the time in real life. And I think that was the heart of the fight with Spider-Man, and I think that was a brilliant move to bring him in.
I agree completely. And there was the one fight where Vision was severely traumatically wounded one of the opponents and it was one of those things where everyone kind of took a step back.
Right.
And of course, I have a dark sense of humor, which my husband wonderfully appreciates. And I was thinking, well, somebody lost an eye.
That's right. But you notice that it was
fun until someone lost an eye.
if it was the real fight, and Falcon lands to check on the guy that he was just fighting, literally just fighting,
because he
got hit by collateral damage by one of his own team members, and Tony Stark hits him with a repulsor blast to the chest, it wouldn't have been on stun if it was a real fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I think everyone was reining themselves in to a large degree, because this was Tony's way of thinking, this was a police action.
Right.
He just needed to rein these guys in, bring them to heel, maybe lock him up for a little while and get him, you know, to straighten up and fly right, and everything would be fine. They weren't out to kill each other by any means.
It was a football game, what it was. Yes. Cap needed to get from here to there. Cap needed to get from here to there. Mm-hmm. Tony's job was to stop him. Cap was the quarterback. Tony's job was the defensive end, and that was the whole thing. Right? It wasn't supposed to become what it became, and I think that was the shocking moment for Tony, was that my hubris strikes again. You know, this was not supposed to happen.
Right. Oh. Overall, I loved it. I would, of course, recommend it to anybody. And
it was one of the most satisfying superhero movies ever.
Yeah.
I think that, for me, Winter Soldier still wins. as my favorite Marvel movie, only because it was a scaled down espionage movie. I do think the movie suffered a little in storytelling from having so many characters. I think that they did it well. They pulled it off well. They pulled it off well enough to make it my second favorite Marvel movie, which is saying something. But I think that it suffered just a little bit from you know the too many cooks in the kitchen scenario.
Would you consider it almost kind of this way, whereas Winter Soldier is your new hope and this is your return or this is your empire, and then so we're waiting for the return.
Well, I think that Winter
Soldier, the third arc of the story.
I think Winter Soldier I would consider it that way, but I think Winter Soldier, I think this was Return. I think this movie was Return of the Jedi, and I think that Winter Soldier definitely
without the Muppets.
Yeah, I think tonally, Winter Soldier was Empire, Yeah, I think that's why I like it more, because that's the kind of movie I really like. I don't want the happy ending. I want Luke, you know, floating in a back to tank. I want the sense of unease and open ending that you know has to be resolved. I want that in a movie, and I think that's why I like Winter Soldier better. And you know, that being said, Return is one of my favorite movies, and this was definitely the Return of the Jedi of the Captain America series, in the sense that, you know, you get the grand fight scenes and you get and you get the hero's journey of, this was really Tony Stark's hero's journey movie. It was a Captain America movie, but this is the movie we really see Tony Stark turn the corner and realize, you know, all of the destruction that his actions have wrought and how he comes to terms with it. And at the end, you know, you have this kind of realization that maybe Cap was right all along, you know, and he's lost his best friend essentially, in because of ideology, and is it worth it and all that. So, man, I'm long-winded tonight. Sorry, guys.
Oh, it's great. I've really enjoyed myself. I know we're probably going to need to call it on time here pretty soon, but this has been a blast. Can you guys think of anything that we haven't touched on? Before we go to the final words there.
The only thing I can say is that if you want to show that superheroes have been in a fight, everybody gets a black eye. They called it a black eye specialist from somewhere to give every single superhero in this movie a black eye.
They
at some
must
point
have
or
had
another.
Like a book of like every possible type of black eye, like maybe pictures of boxers or something. Maybe they consulted whoever did the Raging Bull makeup.
Right? Because everyone had a black eye at some point. I'm like, good God, the black eye gang's here. She's like, Tony's got a black eye. Cap's got a black eye. Bucky's got a black eye. But I think at some point, Spider-Man. What's that?
What'd you say?
Oh, that's it.
You back?
Yeah.
We were here the whole time.
We've been dead for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all. Just the black eye gang was like it's like, good God, everybody's got a black eye. Nobody made it out eye unscathed from this film.
Oh. Well, Cole, did you have anything else to add?
Well, I just think that, you know, it's a tremendous accomplishment. You know, this is the culmination. This is almost like the apology letter for Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And I think Age of Ultron literally marks the first point where studio meddling set in, and I think a valuable lesson was learned.
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
I want to see this movie again. I've seen Age of Ultron one time and really didn't care if I ever saw it again.
Right.
Right.
Because it brought very little to the table. There was not, it was like an Avengers movie in name only. And I think part of that, as we discussed, I think if we did a what'd you think on it, was that part of it was it was almost like the studio didn't know what the movie was.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I arrive at this movie and I'm not prepared for a snarky Ultron.
Right. Right.
I would like a snark. I probably would enjoy it. If I go ever watch it again and just watch it for what it is, I would probably enjoy that. But I wasn't
born in that mindset.
Yeah, it was like, there was a Coen Brothers movie that Billy Bob Thornton was in. And, I'm fresh off of Fargo.
Right.
And right. I go into this movie expecting some yucks, and they weren't there. And it took me a while to realize, no, I'm not. I'm watching this movie. And Hail Caesar suffered from an ad campaign that misled you in the same way that Age of Ultron's ad campaign did.
Right. It's just like you went expecting something totally different. Well, what I can't think of anything else to add. And, of course, usually with What Do You Think, the last thing that we always do is say whether or not you'd recommend the movie. And I think, of course, right now it's pretty obvious all of us would say get off your heels and in your wheels and go see it.
Absolutely.
Now, so this is the question that I'm going to end this with instead. Say you're kind of new to the superhero movie game. You haven't been watching every single one of them up to this point, but you are getting really kind of intrigued, and your friends won't shut up about these, and so you kind of want to get into it. Before you see this movie, I think seeing Captain America Winter Soldier is a must. I would DVR it, Netflix it, rent it, steal
it's
it, borrow it from your friend.
Yes. It's a fun thing to have under your belt before you.
Right.
Yes, you do need to see this before you see that. You'll be glad you did. What one other movie would you also like to recommend to people to see before you see this film to kind of really add to the flavor of it, make it more enjoyable?
Ant-Man.
Dolph Lundgren's Punisher.
Oh,
no, I'm kidding.
Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have not seen Ant-Man, you owe it to yourself to see it in general, on principle. But you especially need to see Ant-Man before you see this, because it will bring the Ant-Man character into wonderful context.
See, I would go. I'm gonna go with a little dissension in the ranks, because I'm gonna say if Winter Soldier's the given, if we're telling people to see Winter Soldier, I'm gonna say watch Age of Ultron next. Watch it right before you go. And the reason I say that is because I walked out of a Civil War with a new understanding of what Age of Ultron is, and I think that Age of Ultron was ultimately the setup movie for this movie. I think that it was the setup that made this movie. You got introduced to the schism between Iron Man and Captain America in a big way in Age of Ultron. You got introduced to why the Vision is what he is, where the Scarlet Witch came from. You got the beginnings of a different Scarlet or Natasha Romanoff in this. I think that it plays very well as a prequel to Civil War, not as a standalone movie.
Okay.
Now, from that
okay.
standpoint, I would agree with you, because that was the feeling I got, that this was the Avengers movie that was just produced solely to set up Black Panther, Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many things that this was just, it was like the T-ball of
right, it was the setup,
Marvel
it was the
movies.
Layup.
It was,
yeah.
It was like, all they did was put the ball on a stand so that they could hit it and learn how to make a better movie, or, you know.
It was the alley-oop to what Civil War ended up being, because you needed that setup to really understand what was happening with it's almost like they had the idea for Civil War first and needed they had the ending and they needed to put the middle in, so we needed the catastrophe at Sokovia. We needed to understand why Iron Man was feeling the way that he was and why Captain America was feeling the way that he was, and the only way we were going to get there was to make this Age of Ultron movie and to describe those feelings. So that's the way I felt coming out, at least. That was mine.
Okay. Well, Cole took my first choice, which was Ant-Man. I loved that movie, and I was really, really thrilled to see him again, even in a tiny part, because I knew him from the original movie. I agree with you on the Age of Ultron, too. So if I've got to pick from the remaining movies, I guess I am going to say probably, if you haven't already, see the original Avengers movie, because that, what I guess is referred to as the Battle for New York,
yes,
is such a pivotal historical event that's referred to in just about every movie made after. And so if you don't know the kind of collateral CFU that thing was,
yes,
then you don't really understand the impact of referencing it.
Right.
So I'd see that too. So definitely see it.
There you go. I think Avengers goes a long way to establishing the dynamic between characters as well, that you're going to need to sort of understand in this movie if you want to know why Hawkeye is siding so strongly with Cap,
right.
You know, or why Black Widow's kind of playing the middle, you know, that you get a lot of that, the beginnings of that in the first Avengers movie. So it's a good choice. It's a really good choice.
Okay. Well, that's all I got, gentlemen.
Cole, why don't you plug us up?
All right.
Get out of here, Bullet.
We're coming to you from the Wakanda branch of the Jedi Core Universe.
That's what that echo is.
Yeah, that's right.
My cranium.
It's everywhere. They use it for, like, everything.
The toasters.
Cutlery. Wallpaper, vibranium wallpaper, who knew? It's actually wall metal. But at Jedi, good God, JediCole.com, you can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. We can find us on Twitter, where we'll have some big, major, fun announcement coming up very soon at the Jedi Cole U, because the Jedi Cole universe is about to undergo some changes thanks to Wakandan technology and the incredible help of one Andrew Farmer.
A larger world.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Right. Take your first steps into a larger
world. I need to just point to Andy here real quick and say that a lot of what you're going to see is because Andy's like, hey, it's about time. And not only did you say, hey, it's about time, because I probably would have said that too, he went in and made this happen, so...
Working on making it happen.
We're getting there, but when it does happen, there's going to be a lot of Andy all over it, which happens a lot with stuff.
Which is the name of my one-man show.
Yes, indeed.
It's happening soon.
Just real a thick coat of Andy.
Just, yes. Everything's coming up Andy. Gross. That's gross. If anybody wants to go and see you live or see any of our guests, where can they find information?
In fact, as you listen to this, granted days late from when it should have been up, and in place of a technically troublesome episode or issue of the Hey Kids Comics we're working on, we had some had a kind of a lost episode go on, but we're replacing it.
Yep.
So as you're listening to this, we're probably just days away from Texas Comic Fest in Louisville. Check out Convention Awareness Project Texas, cap-tx.info. If you're keen on this show, you really ought to check out. It's a fun little show. I'll have a booth there in the, apparently the Artist Alley, it turns out, and
in
the company of some amazing artists. A lot of great guests, including the incredible Mike Zeck. Good God, who brings Mike Zeck to town anymore? I'm really anxious to see him. Come on out. We've got a bunch of cool collectibles we'll be peddling to support this and other shows, and we hope to see you out there.
There you go. Well, Catherine, thank you so much. It's always, always, always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It's always a treat. I love it every time.
We've got an X-Men movie coming up at the end of the month, so I think we're going to have another one of these.
I think we're going to have Age of Pocky-clips.
Age of Pocky-clips, which is what happens when Japanese candy gets the notion that there should be no other candy.
That's right.
And raises up with his great Egyptian candy powers.
That one's
going to be begging for it. What do you think?
I think so. All right, guys. Well, join us soon. We're going to get our technical difficulties in hand and get a new show out for you from our impending story arc. But Catherine, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. This is so much fun. I always learn stuff about movies that I didn't know or get brilliant dissenting opinions on movies from you guys. So thank you so much. And join us next week
when we have more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Bigger, better, leany, meany, money, mo, and flower. You're the chosen one.